How's it going?
Going okay. How about you, mister?
Live via satellite, Chris Shively, a.k.a. Murderbot, from Chicago, where it's witches take cold. And, yeah, you plan on coming to Lawrence for Thanksgiving to do a DJ set, right?
Indeed.
What are you going to do?
That's a good question. I don't know, just like fun party time things. It's going to be me and Jason Garden, if you know him, and Kyle Garrison. The three of us are going to be there. And I don't know, just like stupid dance music. It should be fun.
Is that always your specialty, or is that just for this particular night?
Yeah, I guess so. Just anything that, you know, I like and is dancey and generally tends to be like poppy and mindless, but I don't know, poppy and mindless in an interesting way, I suppose.
Right.
One hopes.
One hopes. Yeah, well, you're wearing so many hats these days. It seems like you, now are doing your own music, DJing,
yeah,
running a label, and all of those things. How long has it been since you moved up to Chicago?
Oh, a year and a half or something like that.
Okay, and were you up in Lawrence before that?
Before that, I was in Kansas City. And then before that, I was in Amsterdam. And then before that, I was in Lawrence. I think.
Gotcha.
I think I have that right.
Okay. Yeah, because you know, I know you started off, you know, doing like sets on KJHK. And,
yeah.
You know, I guess maybe if anything, that probably got you involved in the Lawrence music scene. But it doesn't seem like you performed as much while you were here as you do now that you live in Chicago.
Yeah. I kind of laid low and stayed home a lot and worked on music. And it wasn't actually until I was done with school that I actually started bothering to play out again. I had played out a lot at like raves and such back in high school, but then that whole scene went down really, really hard in the late 90s. The police presence just really killed that.
Huh.
And I was in school and theoretically working on that and working on a lot of music stuff. So there was kind of a break of a few years where I was really not bothering to play out much that kind of coincided with me being in school in Lawrence and all that.
When you were in high school and you were sort of watching the race fall apart, how did you feel about that at the time? And, you know, describe how that all went down.
It was really disheartening. Basically, there was this whole scene that was really fun and interesting and kind of groundbreaking. And
especially when you're 16.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I think it genuinely was. I mean, there's a lot of bad stereotypes about ravers and rave kids and all that stuff, but when it was starting, it was really something incredibly new and something, I hate to sound really goofy and sappy, but it was something like meaningful and, you know, groundbreaking and forward thinking. And eventually it became more about like a drug marketplace, and you had a lot of kids who didn't really know why they were there or didn't really have an interest in the music and were more just there to score some pills, right? And eventually enough, you know, like children of mayors or like prominent politicians around the country got kind of swept up in this thing to where there began to be this police crackdown. And it was really incredibly disheartening to see this thing that you really felt invested in get dismantled by the police in this kind of brute force fashion. Like, there were a lot of things that went down that I would say were pretty unethical as far as police behavior, but also you know, the way promoters behaved and the people throwing the parties. And so, I don't know. It was very disappointing to see something like that happen. I can tell you that everybody who was around back then and in that scene now is either, like, burnt out, old fogey, you know, like, done with going out, or has spent the last, like, 15 years waiting for that kind of thing to build up again. I feel like the first half of this decade was really a dry spell for electronic music and electronic music culture. You had the whole, you know, electro clash thing happening, which I was never that huge on. And, I mean, you know, some of it was okay, but it seemed a little one note. And then you had indie rock was doing really, really well, especially like that, you know, dancier kind of stuff in 2002, 2003, you know, LCD Sound System, first few singles and things like that. And that stuff was good enough that it really kind of seemed for a minute like electronic dance music didn't have that much of a reason to exist, and it wasn't very good in that era. And so finally now, a lot of new things are starting to bubble up again. And, you know, this kind of music is getting really, really interesting and vibrant again for the first time in a while. And it's really exciting. Juke and ghetto tech and all that kind of like Midwestern, you know, booty house, ghetto house, things like that. Dubstep is really, really coming into its own and maturing and getting really interesting. Bassline, there's a lot of new kind of house music coming out that's interesting for the first time in forever. I know that, I mean, I'm not much for like minimal techno, but that seems thriving as well, even though I really kind of keep my head out of it. There's just all these different genres that are kind of intermingling and getting really good. And 15 years ago, I would go into a record shop and literally not have enough money for all the amazing things that came out just in that one week. And then 5 years ago, I would go into a record shop and struggle to find one good thing to buy. And now it's like 1994 again, where you just, there's no hope of even keeping up with the new things coming out. There's just so much amazing stuff coming out right now. It's really wonderful. Like jungle records, basically things that sound like they came out in, you know, 1994-95 were my first few releases, again out of that whole like raver nostalgia thing. Music was boring me in 2002-2003, and so I just started working on things that sounded like the records I was listening to all the time, which were all old rave records. And turned out some other people were thinking the same thing at that point in time, and there kind of ended up being this big scene of new jungle records coming out. And I kind of got a bit of a following through that. Eventually, you know, I started branching out and working on other things, and right now I'd say, you know, the music I make has a lot of that older kind of rave influence, has a lot of dubstepy bits to it, and a lot of kind of Midwestern house, juke, ghetto tech kind of elements. But it's basically, you know, the same as what I listen to. It's fast, poppy, catchy dance music, and I don't know, I think a lot of electronic music is pretty obtuse and hard for a casual listener to get into, and I really, you know, I grew up on rave music, but I also grew up on, like, Erasure and Wham and stuff, and so I'm just really into things that are kind of poppy and accessible and immediately something you can latch onto, and I really try to, I guess, merge that with being kind of artistic and forward-thinking and doing new things. I kind of try and walk that line, I suppose.
So being a DJ for so many years and then making that transition to making music, was it kind of a learning curve for you?
Yeah, well, to be honest, I've been making music the whole time. I just hadn't been very good at it. I was tinkering around with songwriting since I started DJing. So it had been a long time, but there's a lot of studio technology and mastering and things that you have to learn if you're going to make electronic music that a band, their producer and their engineer do that, you know? And that's a whole kind of job field on its own, apart from being a musician. And so it's hard. Well, I mean, it was hard for me. Some people it just comes naturally to, and they're just geniuses. But it was really hard for me to learn that kind of art of making, not of making a record, but of making a record sound good, you know? And it took me a long time to get a grasp on that, and it wasn't until I finally got my head around that I was able to make music that I actually wanted to listen to. So I'd always kind of tinkered around with songwriting, and maybe, you know, it's the same thing with a rock band, you know, maybe you have good songs, but if they sound like a crappy demo tape, you either need to figure out how to make them sound produced, or you need to find someone to help you do that, you know? And so that was really more my struggle, I guess, was making these songs I wrote not sound like they were recorded in the bottom of a cave, you know? And it took me forever, to be fair, to be perfectly honest, like, most people get their heads around that quicker than it took me. I was really slow for some reason. So
what was the first thing you really put out there for people to hear?
Well, I put out a 12-inch on a label called Mash It. It was just like a two-track single in, gosh, I guess it would have been 2004 or maybe early 2005. And that was a jungle thing. And that was the first thing. To date, I'm not sure how many things I've put out. Probably over a dozen, I guess. I have put out some 12 inches, an album.
The album was called Rough in the Bunny Business.
Yes. Which is, yeah, it's a really bad, like, multi-level pun. Yeah. Yeah.
Explain that multi-level pun.
Okay, so there's an old Prodigy record, right? From back when the Prodigy were a rave group, in like 92, right? That's called Rough in the Jungle Business, right? And so, it's a reference to that, and it's a reference to the cute bunnies on the cover, and I guess that's not that many levels.
Were you a Prodigy fan back in the day?
What's that?
Were you a fan of Prodigy back in the day?
I really was. I absolutely love their first two albums. And then when Firestarter came out, when the album that had Firestarter on it came out, and they were like trying to break in America, and they had that dude singing, it broke a lot of people's hearts. Like, there were a lot of people who just wanted to cry the day that album came out.
Did you cry the day that album came out?
Oh, I could have. It was one of those things. There are a few moments where I've come close to tears about music stuff, and that was one of them.
Or maybe you felt now.
Yeah. Luther Vandross, when he died, that was another one. Oddly enough, I know those don't seem like they go together, but man, I love me some Luther.
Yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, so I was really into the Prodigy. I was really into Orbital back in the day. There were a lot of groups like that kind of almost broke into the mainstream in the early 90s, but then kind of the whole rave thing never really managed to catch on in the same way that, like, quote-unquote alternative rock caught on.
I guess it's probably a good time to introduce Sleazetown and Dead Homies.
Yeah. I run two record labels, which, here's a secret, is the exact same thing as running one record label, except you have two different logos.
Yeah.
You know, it's still a bunch of boxes of records in your apartment that don't make you any money. So, you know.
So, which started first, and how did that all come about?
Dead Homies started first, specifically as a jungle thing. It's kind of a tongue-in-cheek name. And so I started that to put out jungle records and then kind of dubstep records as well. And at the point where I realized, you know, I want to put out other forms of music as well, I started up the other label, Sleazetown. It's the same business. It's, you know, the exact same kind of everything, same distributors and all that, but it's just two different brands, so that when people see this record, they don't expect one thing and get another. You know, I wouldn't want to sell something under the first brand and have people expect it to be like this jungle record and then get home and listen to the Shun record and be like, why isn't this jungle? You know, it's like, just kind of allows a little more clarity of marketing, I guess.
Okay. Was it the partnership with Shun that kind of inspired the startup of Sleazetown?
Yeah, I've been thinking about starting another label, and then Cody played me that album, and I talked to him about, you know, how are you guys kind of distributing this or getting this out there, because I think we could really, you know, kind of blow this up if we market it right. And he's like, okay, let's do that. And so that was what caused me to actually take the plunge into starting the second one. And we've been doing pretty well with it. They are going on tour with CSS and Tilly and the Wall. They did the West Coast leg of that tour already, and now they're about to head off on the Midwest and East Coast legs. We've been getting a lot of, like, blog love and, like, video love. The Street Jizz 12-inch comes out, gosh, any day now. I think the jackets are being manufactured right now, and I think the records are done. So things are looking really good on that front with the Shun record. And then there are a couple of other projects from other groups that are in the woodwork as well. Yeah. died in Chicago. It's very similar to playing at Lawrence because everybody is from places like Lawrence, you know? Like everybody. It's just Kansas City kids, Lawrence kids, Iowa City kids, you know, who moved to Chicago and set up shop in Humboldt Park and then come out to these parties like on the north side. In the south side, the kind of birthplace of house music, you know, really the birthplace of electronic dance music culture as we know it. Kids have a history, you know. People know a lot about house music. Not everybody, but people show up to these parties, and it's clear that they've grown up with house music and ghetto house and juke. And so there's a little more... You can get away with different things, you know. In Lawrence or in Wicker Park in Chicago, you play kind of... There's certain things where you would play them and people would be like, what is this, you know? And I guess there are those things at the South Side, more like old school, you know, house party kid parties. It's a different set of things that you can and can't get away with, you know? I really enjoy disco a lot, and I find that in Chicago on the north side, you can't get away with playing disco. People are like, what is this? I don't know, there's kind of this... I don't know what the reaction is. But it's something where they don't like to hear, like, older tracks. Whereas in Lawrence, people are more open to that. I think just because... Maybe they're a little newer to dance music and they're a little more receptive to it. Or maybe they're, you know, there are a lot of kids in Lawrence who are, like, hardcore, like, internet junkies who know everything about everything and just really study up on their stuff, and so they can appreciate when you throw in this, like, old, you know, rootsy, like, disco record. They, you know, they know what that is and they're, like, into it. Which is kind of a similar reaction on the South Side in Chicago, where these kids grew up with the whole kind of story arc of disco becoming house, becoming all the things that are electronic music now, and so they're kind of more open to that. So, I don't know, I'd say I prefer playing in Lawrence to playing on the north side of Chicago, but the south side parties are really awesome and I enjoy that a lot too.
Yeah. Must have been pretty awesome. Maybe you could tell me, you know, a couple stories from that whole trip. How did it go?
It went really well. I was gone in total for 2.5 months. But 2 weeks of that I was in L.A. So it was really only in Europe for 2 months. I was in Russia, Slovakia, Germany, Denmark, Belgium, the Netherlands, France, and the UK and Ireland. Had a lot of fun. Played at some really amazing parties with really great lineups. played on some of the best sound systems I've ever heard in my life. Gosh, what all happened? I don't know. There's this club in Bratislava that's like literally a Soviet-era nuclear bunker built into a hill under a castle.
Wow.
And it's the craziest. They do, like, police and military training exercises in this place by day, but then at night, it's a nightclub. It's just this giant, like, cavernous, hollowed-out tunnel that they used as, like, you know, a nuclear shelter. In the event of, you know, the Cold War turning into some sort of, you know, nuclear holocaust or whatever. And so not only is it a really cool venue to look at, but it just, acoustically, it's like this giant, like, bass cave. It just magnifies these bass frequencies. And, yeah, so that was amazing. Being in Russia for the first time was a trip. Like, it was really weird, especially since I showed up like 3 days after that whole Georgia debacle kicked off. And yeah, so that was awkward, to say the least.
For you, particularly?
Pardon?
Being an American, it was awkward?
Well, being not Russian, but also being an American, and being there right as that was happening, and having everybody ask me, you know, what do you think of Georgia? You know, aren't they awful? And don't you love our you know, president? Don't you love our prime minister? They're so great. And, like, one person was like, yeah, I really hope Obama wins because McCain has said he doesn't like Vladimir Putin. And so if Obama wins, Russia and America will get along a lot better. And I was like, you know, I didn't have the heart to be like, you know, Obama doesn't like Vladimir Putin either. He just hasn't been asked about it in public yet, you know? Because they had this perception that Obama just loves Russia and was really going to be close pals with Putin and Medvedev. And, you know, what am I supposed to say to that and not have, like, 20 Russian rave kids all pissed off at me for the rest of the night? So,
what was the worst music and or fashion trend you experienced?
Well, gosh.
And best,
in Belgium and the Netherlands, there's this thing called jump style. And it's like, so there's Gabber, right? Which is like extreme hardcore techno, basically for football hooligans, right? It's kind of...
Sounds like it'd be up your alley, Chris. Come on.
Well, you know, some of it's great, but the problem is not... I mean, the problem is the culture around it. It's got that kind... I mean, because it's football hooligan culture, it's got that kind of, like, skinhead thing going on, where you have... You know, some of the kids are like these, you know, white power nationalist skinhead kids. And then the other half of the kids are these, you know, the anti-fascist, non-racist skinhead kids, which are essentially the same thing, except, you know, they like to beat up other skinheads instead of beating up minorities. And so, you know, all they do is just fight. They show, it's skinhead culture, but with hardcore techno, you know? They show up in their, like, little motor scooters with their Fred Perry sweater vests and their shaved heads and smash cans of, you know, beer on their foreheads or whatever. And they're really obnoxious. And so there's this whole culture that's developed. I mean, that's been going on for 20 years in Belgium and the Netherlands. And then recently there's been this thing called jump style that's grown out of that, which is like choreographed line dancing by skinheads to hardcore techno. And it's even worse than that makes it sound. It's mind-blowing. Again, YouTube is like the best resource for everything on Earth anymore. So there are like YouTube videos of this, and it looks kind of like... kind of like Tai Bo mixed with like European folk dancing to hardcore techno. And it's all footwork. Like, your arms stay pretty much still. It's all, like, jumping around, like, footwork type stuff. And they all choreograph and do these, like, routines. And it's... yeah, they're all football hooligan gabber kids. It's crazy.
I love it already.
Yeah, right? Right? Oh, well. London and Bristol, they just, you know, England gets electronic music culture in a way that few other places do. Really, I think it's England and the Midwest really understand it better than anywhere else on earth. Playing these shows in London and Bristol was really, really refreshing and nice. Played with really good lineups, a lot of other people who were really great, and kind of got to feed off that. Amsterdam was a lot of fun. Yeah, I'd say those were definitely the highlights.
I noticed also on your website, murderbot.net, you have a ton of mixtapes posted.
Yeah.
What's your philosophy as far as, you know, making those things and putting them out there?
Well, you know, it's a mixtape. It's not like individual songs that I'm giving away for free, so I don't feel like in electronic music there's kind of this copyright understanding where mixtapes are okay and that doesn't kind of count as infringement, so I'm not really ethically bothered by doing it, and I don't care if I'm giving them away, you know, like, it's free promotion for me, and I know that I've gotten, you know, gigs off of having so many mixtapes around online, and people are like, oh, I really like this mixtape, so come let me pay you money to fly to my city and play records, you know? So it just kind of works out, I guess. And it is an art, and it's something that is hard to do, and you have to be good at it. But even if you're really, really good at it, you're not saving lives, you know? You're not, like, a brain surgeon. You're just playing records. And so, people, I don't know. I try and stay modest about things, and I try to... It just seems silly to me, like, the whole, like, up on stage, being a rock god, look at me, pumping my fists, kind of thing. It just always struck me as, like, really silly, you know, not, like, offensive or wrong or anything. I couldn't do it with a straight face, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Fat Boy Slim.
Yeah, it's not my thing.
Was that a good example?
Yeah, exactly. That's like the perfect example. Oh, or there's this YouTube video of Peter Hook from New Order, and he's DJing at some big party. It's like Sonar or some WMC party, you know, DJing in front of this huge crowd. And he's like so intent on like headbanging and pumping his fist that literally he doesn't actually touch any of the equipment for like 5 minutes. He's just like sitting there like rocking out to his own DJ set, neglecting to DJ. And it's a sight to behold. So yeah, I don't want to be that guy, you know?